Welcome to WebX, practical web accessibility tips. Hello, and welcome to podcast 68 on WebX, accessible Twitter and news. This is Dennis, your host.
And I'm Ross Johnson.
Hello, Ross. Nice to have you again.
Thank you. What's new?
What's new? All kinds of stuff. My family has been away for a few weeks visiting family and friends in Michigan, so I've had some extra time to relax and do some projects.
Ah, so they're kind of up in my neck of the woods, huh?
Yeah, they're like in the Novi area.
Okay, not too far.
Anywhooskies. cool, well, we got a good... more than several news and event items to talk about today.
Yep, the web is always changing, apparently. I mean, go figure.
Yeah, and we'll get to the HTML5 thing in a few minutes. Anyhow, before we get to all the news and exciting things going on, I guess we could talk about, just mention the Refresh Detroit. How's it going, that group?
It's going really well. I mean, we're kind of getting a lot of interest and changing the format a bit. When we had started it, we did more of an informal, you know, somebody goes up and talk, and then we all chat, and we met at like a pub or restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of a little bit after you left, we switched to more of a formal, let's have an official speaker who come in and do an official presentation. That was good, but we kind of lost the interaction that was so great about Refresh Detroit, you know, kind of meeting everybody else. I don't know if you can hear my...
Yeah, I can.
I just got back from the weekend, so he's a little attention star. and yeah, so that was good, but we kind of lost some of the interaction. And now kind of how it's being set up is we're doing more of a panel. So there's, you know, several people all who are going to talk on a topic, but there's a lot more, you know, interaction, asking questions, going back and forth. So it's exciting. I think it's going to be pretty good.
That's cool. And I see the next meeting, I hope I could put up this podcast in time, is in a couple of days. February 10th, is that Tuesday? From 6 to 8:30 Eastern time. And you guys are you guys hooking up with the Michigan Usability Professionals Association?
Yep.
Oh, at Quicken Loans in Livonia.
Yeah, this must be a familiar place.
Yeah, I worked there for a little while. Anyhow, okay, well, that's cool. I noticed if you're not too familiar, Refreshing Cities is kind of a informal organization of there's chapters all around the world of groups of web professionals interested in web accessibility and usability and web standards and everything. It's just web professionals get together and discuss fun computer geeky stuff. And sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, it's great. It's free, so everybody seems to enjoy it. It's just kind of for the community, sort of. Let's get together and talk about the stuff that nobody else wants to.
Yeah, it's fun. So, and although there's still no Refresh organization in the Bay Area, which I'm pretty surprised at. I saw that there's one like in Orange County in San Diego, California, and they're all over the place. There's Phoenix, Cleveland, Dallas, and in other countries as well, in the United Kingdom, like in Newcastle, Cambridge, and I guess there's a new one in Venezuela.
Nope.
So cool.
Yeah, I mean, really is a kind of grassroots organization. It's grown pretty fast and pretty far. You know, it's shocking that you'd think the Bay Area would be like one of the places. One.
Yeah, really. Now, there is a group, the Palo Alto Semantic Web Group, PAWS, and I was going to go once or twice. I ended up never going, and it doesn't look like they have any meetups this year yet. So if anybody out there knows any social, like, web, you know, professional groups in the Bay Area, let me know. You know, like, anything that has to do with web standards and web accessibility, and I'll try to make it to one of those. So unfortunately, I don't know what happened to Paws, but it doesn't look like they're active at this minute. But I'll put a link on this podcast blog entry, so maybe they'll start up again.
Yeah, they just need some encouragement.
Okay, so that's enough about events. Let's move on to news and other cool web accessibility announcements.
Web ads.
Yeah, so you've got an accessible project going on, huh?
Yeah, actually, before I kind of ask for feedback, I mean, I only worked on it for like 6 days.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Just like hardcore going at it. And I don't know if anybody out there knows, I'm really into Twitter, and I know you are too. You know, somebody did a monkey script to help Twitter be a little more accessible, and then somebody asked me, why don't you just use the API and create a whole new accessible Twitter website? I'm like, okay. So that's my new project. Accessible Twitter is here. It's currently in alpha stage because it's actually still being developed. You know, most of the main features are there, but some of the other features, secondary kind of features, are not active yet. So go to accessibletwitter.com and check it out.
Yeah, I got a couple emails from Dennis about it and checked it out, logged in and played with it for a while, and it's pretty cool. I was impressed, you know, and took a look at the markup, and it looks, you know, much cleaner. So
thank you. You know, and Twitter's website, you know, it's considerably better than most websites out there. You know, and the accessibility is okay. You know, there's definitely some issues, but you know, it's definitely not any worse than most other sites out there. Right. You know, and especially a lot of Web 2.0 kind of websites. So yeah, I thought it'd be a good idea, something fun, and yeah, I got some feedback from you and from let's see, Joe Dalson and let's see, Jared Smith from WebAIM. So I've been doing a few updates and just. And doing some more development on it. So if you're interested, check that out and send me some feedback. And if you think it's a worthy cause, and if you like it, or even if you don't like it, you could send a donation and help help me with the hosting fees and all that good stuff, and the maintenance, you know, costs and everything. So actually, I did receive one donation already.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
Which was really cool. So,
what are your future plans for it? I mean, are you just kind of going to try and build in all the feature sets and let people use it? Or?
Yeah, I mean, anybody could just log into it whenever they want. You know, all the data and the whole entire site is like not even 100K, the code. Because all the data and all the images and everything comes from, you know, from Twitter, through the API,
right.
Which is part of the cool thing of the API. It's the API is pretty cool, man. It's pretty fast and it's easy to learn. So so yeah, it's been a fun, exciting project. So hopefully, when the family gets back, I'll still have some time to continue working on it. I'm sure I will here and there, but.
Yeah. Well, it looks like you made good progress in the week or two they've been gone. I mean,
yeah.
Not too many projects you can get up and running in alpha in a week or two, so I'm impressed.
Thanks. Okay, let's move on. It looks like you came up with a pretty valuable guide here.
Yeah, not quite as impressive as a accessible Twitter, but I kept running into a problem where and I think a lot of kind of web developers who end up handing off a site to a client run into this, especially if they're CMS-based, where I kind of style everything that that fit the specs of the design comps we created, put it all in a CMS and give it to them and teach them about, you know, importance of heading ones versus sixes and, you know, only use tables and tabular data. And I come back and realize that they end up using like a heading level 5, which I never end up styling because it wasn't in the design comps we made. Or maybe I'd forget to like stylize a table because we didn't use a table. But, you know, we kind of came back to the website and it didn't fit the design.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought was is I just created kind of a one-page site that has all the most common HTML elements that you might use, you know, unordered list, ordered list, definition list, tables, some micro formats, all the different heading levels, so that you can load in your style sheet or paste in your styling and make sure that everything is kind of styled in a way that makes sense.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of got a, if you want to, you can load in style sheets with JavaScript. So I was kind of playing around and loading other people's style sheets in just to see how far they go in stylizing their markup. And it was pretty surprising. You know, some of even the kind of more outspoken people about semantics didn't go past like a heading level 2 or heading level 3
oh, really?
In their style. Yeah.
Yeah, I usually I don't go past H4 very often, but I usually find myself getting to H4, you know, on most websites and stuff.
Yeah.
For one reason or another.
Yeah. I think it's especially important if you use any sort of CSS reset. I mean, it's pretty easy to kind of like forget something and then all of a sudden, you know, it doesn't match anything at all.
Speaking of resets, the I'm not really a firm believer in CSS resets, but for the accessible Twitter, I'm using one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What made you change your mind?
I just wanted to make sure I started with a really clean slate, you know, and just be sure that if I'm resetting all the CSS values, that for sure, you know, no matter what user agent the user is using, the you know, I'm starting on the same page with everything, so I just figured I'd kind of play it safer that way, I guess, is one way to put it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes
more
sense.
More consistent. But yeah, so it's worked out pretty well. In the past, I've tried it a couple times in the past, and I ended up just, like, deleting it and back out. But this time, I'm sticking with it, so I think it's gone pretty well.
Yeah, I'm quite fond of them. I mean, it's kind of nice to start with a clean slate and know that all my margins are kind of where I'm going to want them to be in all browsers. And
yeah.
But I can see the reasons not to as well.
And if you're not sure, anyone out there, I mean, what a CSS reset is, it's basically just a set of CSS-like styles that removes all the styling from the browser. Like, any browser has like some kind of default styling that it puts on native HTML. And this set of CSS removes all of the styles from everything. So you're starting like from zero.
Right, right. So I mean, the most common thing is that if you didn't do any CSS styling, obviously an H1 is going to be bigger than an H2.
Exactly.
And that's some of the default styling, so it kind of zaps it all and says, pick these on purpose.
And I think I used Eric Meyer's CSS reset.
Yeah, I use his.
Yeah.
I don't know the pros and cons of everybody else's. I know there's a few other out there, but figure he knows this.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with his work.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Let's move to the screen reader survey results. That was a pretty important issue. So WebAIM, our good friends over at WebAIM, came out with some survey results on screen readers. And so you can shoot. I'll put a link up. You can shoot over there and check it out. But it was very interesting, and it got a lot of reaction from readers and some of the main points include, let's see, like the most common screen reader, obviously, was JAWS, 74%, and Window Eyes was 23%. And let's see, 12% of respondents use a screen reader on a mobile phone. 76% of users always or often navigate with headings, which I thought was very important to know. You should obviously use headings, you know, but that just kind of backs up, you know, the reason why.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a really large number, 76%. So that kind of, you know, reinforces that you should use headings, but not only the use of headings, but the proper kind of hierarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll make that easier to figure out.
And what I like to do is, like, even for my menu, I'll put a heading tag that says, you know, main menu or something.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then, you know, if you want to not display none, but if you want to hide it, like, off the page, you know, I think that's okay. But, you know, if somebody using a screen reader goes through, like, they could still find that heading where the menu is.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
What else here? 71.5% of screen reader users reported that Flash is very or somewhat difficult. So, I guess that's not too surprising, but, I mean, Flash is supposed to be pretty good with accessibility now, but I think the biggest problem, obviously, is that, you know, implementing that is a different story.
Yeah, I think most of the people who are picking Flash, to use in a way that kind of makes it a screen reader going through it would really notice it, are not spending the time to make it accessible. I mean, like, if your whole site's Flash, chances are you're not really caring about accessibility.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Or if you have a Flash menu or something like that, where if it was just, you know, some kind of design, highlight, fading images or whatever, you probably wouldn't slow down someone using a screen reader quite as much.
Mm. Yeah, so, I mean, my recommendation hasn't really changed, but, yeah, to not use Flash for all of your content, and if you must use Flash, you know, use it for just a portion of the page and make it accessible, and if for some reason you can't make it accessible, then, you know, make the content accessible some other way.
Yeah.
And I guess they came up with the follow-up article or blog post at WebAIM, a closer look at Flash and PDF results with the screen reader survey. Have you read that one? I haven't actually read that one. So.
No, not yet. It's kind of bookmarked for
the
next few articles I'm going to...
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, well, we'll list that, and that's out there if anyone wants to check that out. I'm sure it's very good, as with the rest of WebAIM's information and articles.
Yep. And if somebody wants to summarize it for us so we don't actually have to read it, feel free to email it.
Yeah, or leave a comment on the blog.
Yeah, the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, impress us.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of WebAIM, a little while before the screen reader survey results, they came out with a very good WCAG 2.0 checklist. And I think I posted something about that on the WebAX site. But yeah, it's very good. And they made their own checklist from all the, you know, from the new Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0 that came out in early December, the final released public version. Have you checked that out?
Yeah, I've looked through it. And,
so, it looked pretty solid, especially for the first go.
Yeah, I think it's come a long way, and I'm kind of liking how it turned out. So.
Speaking of WCAG 2, I'm not sure if I've posted this before or what, but I just love it. It's hilarious. The WCAG 2 theme song on YouTube. Have you seen this?
No, I saw that link, and this is the first I've even heard about it.
Oh, really?
It sounds cool.
You gotta check it out. It's hilarious. let's see. Blah, 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 blah. This guy, David McDonald, did it. Special thanks to Armando Prini. He wrote this song and recorded this, made this video. It's on YouTube. It's a WCAG 2 theme song about, oh, it's just hilarious. You guys got to see it. So I wasn't sure if I had mentioned it or posted it before, so I figured I'd put it in there again. It's so funny. I wrote a tweet about it, too, a few days ago. So I think it's just great.
The wonders of YouTube. It seems like the second sort of thing I've seen like this, there's also like an SEO rapper who has a whole bunch of videos of him rapping about SEO. So.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever need attention related to your web profession, it seems like there's always...
Do a rap about it, huh?
Right, right. Put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Make a song.
Speaking of YouTube, our transitions are very good today. Speaking of YouTube, let's see. Accessify at accessify.com. Has created this, I haven't actually used it yet, but it looks really cool. So maybe we could get some feedback from some listeners about it. Easy YouTube Caption Creator. A very rough first build. So I went and I checked it out. It looks really easy. It looks pretty cool. So, it helps create a caption file, suitable for YouTube. And, what you do is you just go in and you enter the YouTube URL and then it creates, well, you have to do, the transcription. You have to acquire the transcription still, you know, but this thing generates the captioning file for YouTube, automatically. So, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea. And I wonder kind of how it actually implements. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to use it either, but my first thought is, you know, it seems like the times I looked at YouTube's code, YouTube is terribly inaccessible.
Yeah.
So I almost wonder, and maybe you can integrate it kind of on your own site, so it's a little cleaner than having it actually on YouTube's site, but yeah, they've got all kinds of inline JavaScript.
Okay, I'm only going to say this once. Have you ever been to Ticketmaster's website?
I have, but it's probably been a while.
The website is pretty good. A small gripe I have about it is... you reminded me with the inline JavaScript. JavaScript is required for the site, which I could understand. But just go to Ticketmaster.com and look at the code, and make sure you have a paper bag with you when you do it. In case you have to heave. So that's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, cool. I think we just have like one or two other topics to discuss. HTML5. Should we start about it?
Sure, yeah. So you may have heard there's a kind of a lot of discussion lately. Have you been reading it or keeping track of kind of what?
Not lately. I was earlier, like a few months ago, but honestly, I don't know. You tell me what's going on lately, because I kind of gave up. I kind of got the impression it was too early to worry about it.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of what everybody seemed like was the case. You know, everybody was saying, well, it's predicted to be widely adopted in, you know, 2022. we've got some time, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a few kind of interesting opinions that, you know, we should start thinking about it now. And so, Jeremy Keith and Andy Clark. So Jeremy Keith of Clear Left and Andy Clark of what's his company and all that malarkey, something.
Oh,
like
really?
That.
I don't know.
He did the Transcending CSS book.
Mm-hmm.
So they started talking about how we should start kind of preparing, and a big thing that they used an example is kind of HTML5 inspired class names. So even though we don't have like an article tag yet, we can do a class article and use it as the same sort of thing. And you know, it's kind of a cool idea. You know, for I'm really into semantics and semantic names and that sort of thing, and especially in any convention you
right,
can
right.
use that can kind of help unify the web. Kind of a cool idea. So they're saying, hey, just because it's not going to be widely adopted for a while doesn't mean that we can't start thinking about what it will provide, which is cool.
That is a good point. I will check out those articles. It looks like you found two articles about that.
Yeah, and Jeremy Keith kind of references, you know, four or five sites that are doing this right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of cool to look through and see, you know, how they're approaching it.
I like Jeremy Keith. He's cool. I like his work, and I met him really briefly. I introduced myself last year at the at a conference in San Francisco, and he's a cool dude, man. He's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, have you seen that Clear Left actually posted a new version of their site recently?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of one of those companies that seems to do it all, you know, make these beautiful, accessible, well-coded websites. So.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have a problem with the beautiful part. But I'm good at the other parts. Anyhow, so what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, so the HTML5. Yeah, that's a good idea. I like conventions, and I think, you know, it's not a standard, so what? I mean, like, with usability, you know, there's conventions, and for usability reasons, you want to stick to those most of the time, so why not for the coding?
Yeah, and even if, you know, HTML5 isn't adopted for that long, if everybody starts using these conventions, then there's so much more meaning that can be pulled out of the websites that do.
Yeah, it won't be such a great leap when it happens.
Right.
So hopefully a lot of people were doing that with WCAG too. So as far as you know, like the HTML5, I mean, I guess most of the tags are still pretty similar, but there are like a few like kind of big differences, like as far as like the, instead of just using divs. That seemed like to be the biggest change for me, is instead of using divs with all these whatever ID you want to name it for layout, now there's going to be actual tags semantically created specifically like for layout, right? Like a header tag and like a body, like, or not a header, but a banner or something. What is it called? I forget.
Yeah. You know, there's kind of more meaningful markup for what...
for the popular sections of a web page, like a, right? Like a
right.
footer. And
yeah, so they are suggesting like a header tag, and then there would be like a section tag and an article tag, navigation, that sort of thing.
Yeah, navigation, footer, whatever.
Yeah. And then even like content and sub-content, so you can kind of associate, you know, two pieces of the content as, you know, semantically what they are. You know, this is the main content, this is the sub-content. It's a really cool idea as far as semantics and markup, but apparently we've got some time.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, maybe we should point out, I don't know, if you're wondering why semantic markup and web standards is good for accessibility, I guess, well, you could say if semantic markup, if it's semantic, if the markup, like, describes the content better, then your user agent can interpret and convey that information better to the user.
Yep.
And then web standards is in a similar manner. You know, if everybody's using the same kind of markup, you know, all the different kinds of browsers and user agents and everything are basically playing the same game, and so we're all on the same page and trying to interpret and display, you know, the web pages in a consistent manner.
Yeah, and once there's kind of a way to identify content as what it is, you know, there's a lot of cool things you can do as far as web applications and It's kind of like Yahoo has this Search Monkey engine where it displays listings, but from Yelp it can figure out, you know, pull the map into the listing because it knows what the map is.
Mm.
Pull the review into the list, the review, because it knows, you know, what section of the website is review. And you can do that much more of that once content is properly described.
You know what word comes to mind when we're talking about this? Microformats.
Yeah.
I wonder if microformats is gonna still be around if people are, you know, become good at semantic markup and HTML5 is more semantic, so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it might help shape it, and we do have over 10 years, I guess, so maybe it won't go away anytime soon.
So seriously, are they really aiming for 2022?
Well, I think that's kind of where the confusion came, is people kind of thought that's when it was supposed to be released. But what they're actually saying is that's when they predict that it'll be widely adopted. I don't know if that means in terms of support or usage. Because if it's usage, well, I can see that. There's still, you know, all sorts of intranets that are coded for IE6.
Yeah. But even if that's usage, I mean, that's still, yeah, like, say you give it 2 or 3 years of leeway, you know, before it's adopted, you know, that's still, yeah, 10 years away, 9 or 10 years away.
Yeah. So, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, I guess that wraps it up for Web Axe podcast number 68, Accessible Twitter and News. Go to accessibletwitter.com and check it out. Give me some feedback.
While you're there, make sure to follow Dennis and I.
Yeah, I'm Dennis L. What are you?
I am 3-point Ross.
Oh, yeah. And more important than me is you have to follow Accessible Twitter. It's Accessible TWITR. Accessible Twitter is the Twitter account. So if you want to follow, like, what's going on with the application and updates and stuff on Twitter, then follow that account and you will receive them. Ask and you shall receive.
I will do.
Cool. Great. Well, I think that was an excellent podcast. Thank you, Ross, for joining, and we'll talk to you next time.
The WebAxe blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com, webaxe.blogspot.com. Email webaxe@gmail.com, webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAxe is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. www.checkengineusa.com.